During next 20 minutes, I'll be talking to you about the rationality of this study, the mode of action of BT proteins, not in detail, just to make a set up the stage for my talk. Then the selection, how did we do the selection experiments, whether it's 1AC or MEP2 as a selection agent, and then the resistance characterization after we selected for resistance, what did we do with those resistant insects, such as the resistance mechanism work and also cross-resistance work, then finally we'll lead to conclusion. Well, just not to boast around, the work I'm going to present in next 20 minutes is recently accepted in Applied and Environmental Microbiology, and it will come out in January. Well, laboratory selected resistant insects provide a model to study the resistance mechanisms and characters. Information from such studies can be useful for resistance management. Well, for BT resistance selection, many different forms of proteins have been used. However, success of such selection experiments varies with insect and the protein form. For example, if you take Helicocorpa zea, many people have tried selecting for Cryvonacea resistance using MEP2 as a source. However, they all met with a limited success even after 12 to 14 attempts. For example, there were 6 to 8 attempts from NC State and equal number of attempts from USDA and Arkansas, and also in our own laboratory. Well, this raises concerns about the suitability and the appropriateness of MEP2 as a selection agent. Well, which you can understand better by going through this slide. Here, I have this slide on mode of action of BT proteins. Here, the inclusion body proteins are solubilized in the alkaline gut pH, and the protoxins are activated by gut proteases. Activated toxins are released and they bind to midgut epithelial cell receptors, which leads to cell lysis and the death. If you look at this one, here is MEP2 in which inclusion body proteins are encapsulated in Pseudomonas fluorescens cells. So if MEP2 is going to kill the insect, it has to go through all these steps. In addition to that, it has to rupture the cell wall of Pseudomonas fluorescens. Well, if you look at the BT cotton plant, it expresses full-length protoxin, which is nearly 130 kilodalton protein. But when insect take a bite on it, it consumes both pro and activated toxin because of the enzymes present in the plant cell and also insect saliva. So as soon as insect take a bite, those enzymes are released from the plant cell and also its saliva, and part of the protoxin is activated. So that means insect is consuming both pro and activated toxin. But the percentage of different forms of these proteins is not very clear. Well, use of MEP2 is not appropriate because insect can become resistant to MEP2 by overcoming any of these two steps. At least to our knowledge, one of these steps never occur in the field. However, current BT resistance monitoring in the United States is conducted using MEP2. So we started selection using MEP2 also. In addition to that, we also selected using 1AC activated toxin. Well, to do this selection experiment, we established a susceptible laboratory strain from Monsanto, to which we determined the baseline LC50 values. And the same culture was divided into three strains. One was control, which is unselected for number of generations, which is nearly around 38 now, and the AR strain, which is selected using activated Cryvonacea toxin continuously for 25 generations, and then the MR strain, which is selected using MEP2 as a source. Here we selected for only 8 generations, beyond which we could not maintain the strain. I'll give you the details in the next slides. Well, each generation, we selected thousands of near 1,000 to 2, up to 3,000 individual neonates by incorporating BT proteins into artificial diet and exposing the larvae for 7 days. After selection period, only those larvae which molted into second instar or above were selected. So those larvae were determined based on the head capsule size. Here you can see first, second, and third, and fourth instar larval head capsules. Those selected insects were reared on regular diet until pupation, and the resistance was assessed at selected generations. Here are the selection experiment results. Here is first one when selected using activated Cry1AC, and I'm going to refer to this strain throughout my talk as AR. So here I have the information of number of generations selected at which we conducted the baseline biases, number of insects tested to come up with the LC50 values, and the slope of that regression curve. You can understand these results better by going through this slide. Excuse me. Here, on x-axis, I have number of generations selected, and on y-axis, I have the resistance ratios. Here, after 4 generations of selection, we've obtained nearly 12-fold resistance, which increased to nearly 36-fold after 7 generations, which again increased to more than 100-fold after 11 generations of selection. And it has been maintained at that level since that time. And all our resistance characterization work was conducted when resistance level was nearly 100-fold. Well, here are the results from MEP2 as a source for selection. So here I have the same information as I explained in the previous table. What you can see here is after 4 generations of selection, we had nearly 17-fold resistance, which did not increase even with the 3 additional generations of selection from 4 to 7 at increased level of Cry1AC in the diet. And resistance remained around 12-fold only. Beyond 9 generations, we did not have enough number of larvae to conduct selection experiments, so we reared them on the regular diet. However, after 11 generations, we could not maintain the strain because of the fertility and the fecundity problems we encountered in this strain. So finally, we lost this strain. Well, once you have the resistant insects, the first thing you want to check is what would be the resistance mechanism. If you look at the literature in both tobacco bollworm and pink bollworm and also cotton bollworm, so people have reported that resistance was associated with reduction in the binding. So we conducted binding experiments with collaboration with the Dr. Juan Ferre's lab at University of Valencia by extracting brush border membrane vesicles, and they are assayed with I-125 labeled toxin through homologous competitive binding experiments. When we did these assays, here are the binding results. As you can see in these binding curves, they look similar. One of the curves is for control strain, which is unselected strain, and AR is the resistance strain. So if you look at these binding parameters, KD is the affinity of the binding and RT is the concentration of the receptor sites. If you take the ratio of RT to KD, which is referred as global affinity factor, it is not significantly different between these two strains. So it does suggest that there may not be binding associated resistance in this insect, which contrasts the results coming from the tobacco budworm, pink bollworm and cotton bollworm. And in all these insects, people have shown that resistance was because of the binding and it was linked to alteration in the cadherin-like protein. So we wanted some more confirmation. So what we did, we labeled 1AA toxin, which is more of a diagnostic type of test to check whether the binding is associated with the cadherin or not. So when we did these assays, once again we did not see any binding differences between the control strain and the resistance strain. Well, this binding is happening through domain 2. Let's check out what's going on in the domain 3. So we had some more questions. So if you look at this Cry1AC protein, it has domain 2 and 3 of this protein bind to the receptors. So this domain 3 binds through GalNAc protein. So now if you incubate the GalNAc with the Cry1AC with the GalNAc, it's going to mask the effect of GalNAc binding through GalNAc. So what we did, we incubated 1AC toxin with the GalNAc for 45 minutes and then added the brush border membrane vesicles to check the binding, which is solely happening now only with domain 2. When we did these assays, the inhibition was similar in both control strain and the resistance strain. So all these binding experiments suggest that there are no binding differences with respect to Cry1AC binding and also Cry1AA binding. Further, GalNAc inhibited Cry1AC binding equally well in both the strains. suggesting that domain 2 may not be involved in resistance. Well, what does this binding assays show to us now? So they suggest other kind of resistance mechanisms, maybe proteolysis mediated or something else. Well, after this one, we conducted some cross-resistance studies, mainly testing the BT proteins which are primarily present in the BT cotton or BT corn. The method we used is diet incorporation bioassays, and also we tested cypermethrin. This is mainly because, as we all know that first generation of BT cotton doesn't give 100% control against Helicobacter pyzium. So EPA suggested spraying pyrethroid insecticides when there is a high incidence of Helicobacter pyzium on BT cotton. So we wanted to know if there is a Cry1AC resistant Helicobacter pyzium feeding on BT cotton plant, and if it receives a dose of pyrethroid, what would be its response. So with that idea in background, we conducted these experiments. We used the topical bioassays as the method. Here are the results for cross-resistance studies. So again, when the cross-resistance studies were conducted was the resistance level, or resistance level was nearly 100-fold here, and it was conducted after 19 generations of selection. And the protein tested and number of insects with the LC50s and slope and resistance ratio. As you can see here, so there is a cross-resistance to 1AB toxin. And also we tested Cry2AA, which is similar to Cry2AB, but I'm going to give you the Cry2AB results in the next slide. This Cry2AA, we did not record any cross-resistance here. Further, we also tested VIP3A protein, and we did not see any cross-resistance either. Well, we also tested this Cry1AB expressed in corn leaf powder. And when we did this assays, we could not achieve enough concentration in the diet so that we get the mortality rating on this insect. So what we did, we tried the maximum amount of corn powder which we can incorporate it into the diet, and looked at the growth inhibition of these insects. So it's the same assay except for counting the larvae in terms of dead or alive. We took the weight after 7 days. So after taking the weight, so I consider the untreated larval weight, concentration weight, as the 100%, and referring to that one, what was the growth lost or the weight loss in terms of calculated. And then I plotted this as the percent stunting on y-axis and with the concentration at the x-axis. Here you can see at the maximum dose tested, which is 3.84 ppm, we observed the significant cross-resistance to 1AB, which is similar to what we observed in 1AB toxin, but it's not that to that extent. So the fact that the total cross-resistance to Cry1AB toxin and negligible cross-resistance to Cry1AB expressed in corn leaf powder suggests the proteolysis kind of resistance mechanism in this insect. These results are also, supported by Dr. Brenda's observations, as you can see in our presentation. Further, we also tested Cry2AB expressed in the corn leaf powder. Here, we did not see any cross resistance. Well, when we for cypermethrin studies, we read the resistant insects on untreated diet for 7 days, and also we read some of the larvae on 500 ppm of Cry1AC, which is similar to our selection dose. So this is mainly to simulate Cry1AC resistant insects feeding on BT cotton plant. So as you can see in this resistance ratio, it's only 1.9-fold, so suggests that there is no cross resistance to cypermethrin. So that does indicate use of pyrethroids might play and have played a significant role in delaying the resistance to BT cotton. Well, what is the take-home message final? It's that we achieved more than 100-fold resistance in cotton bollworm using 1AC toxin. High and stable resistance could not be obtained with MEP2. Cross resistance was observed to Cry1AB toxin and also Cry1AB in corn powder. No cross resistance was observed against Cry2AA, Cry2AB, VIP3A, and cypermethrin. suggesting that both Bolgard 2 and Whipcott should be good for IRM. And pyrethroids such as cypermethrin can be used as oversprays. And alteration in binding is most likely not involved in resistance. That, I take the opportunity to thank our funding agencies, which is USDA and Cotton Incorporated, and I thank you all for your kind presence and patience, and I take any questions if you have. Well, Dr. Moore is going to talk about those results. It will be in another half an hour time. Yes, sir. You are referring to 1AC binding versus 1AA binding. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, there might be, it depends on the receptor sites and the affinity of those proteins specifically. And to my knowledge, 1AC share the number of binding sites with 1AA. So with that in background, you might be able to see higher KD or, lower KD, I'm sorry. Okay, if they are sharing some of the sites, you should be able to see higher KD and the higher RT. But when you refer to only 1AA binding, that might be only limited number of receptor sites. So at a given time, with a one given protein, whether it's 1AA or 1AC, if you see a binding difference between the strains, that's when you call there is a binding difference. Any more questions? Thank you. Oh, I finished too early and then we have to wait for 7 more minutes.